We'll return with Brian Preston, former GOP communications director at for the great state of Texas, who is up in arms, literally, about Bob Costas's remarks about gun control and whether or not the lives of Cassandra Perkins and Jovan Belcher could have been saved, as Costas indicates, by virtue of the fact that guns were available to Mr. Belcher, or not to, yeah, to Jovan. Now, let's go to Costas's remarks, Kevin Gallagher, Sunday night, which created this firestorm.
You want some actual perspective on this? Well, a bit of it comes from the Kansas City-based writer Jason Whitlock, with whom I do not always agree, but who today said it so well that we may as well just quote or paraphrase from the end of his article. Our current gun culture, Whitlock wrote, ensures that more and more domestic disputes will end in the ultimate tragedy, and that more convenience store confrontations over loud music coming from a car will leave more teenage boys bloodied and dead. Handguns do not enhance our safety. They exacerbate our flaws, tempt us to escalate arguments, and bait us into embracing confrontation rather than avoiding it. In the coming days, Jovan Belcher's actions and their possible connection to football will be analyzed. Who knows? But here, wrote Jason Whitlock, is what I believe. If Jovan Belcher didn't possess a gun, he and Cassandra Perkins would both be alive today.
And as you can hear, Costas was actually quoting from another source, but nonetheless, right. he was embracing the remarks. Ryan Preston, he has a bully pulpit, and he used it. He's hired by NBC to occasionally offer opinions. Doesn't that mean that on occasion he might offer some opinions we don't like?
Sure. And that also means that we all have the right to object to his opinion. And that's what folks like me are doing. I mean, I was watching the game the other night when Costas made his remarks, and what was so jarring was just how inappropriate it was. I thought the Kansas City Chiefs actually handled this tragedy, which occurred on their team, with incredible dignity and grace. They never tried to politicize it in any way. They talked about the tragedy of the young man's life. They talked about what had happened to and because of their teammate, their colleague, and their friend. But they didn't try to politicize it. They were very graceful about it. What I think Costas was doing and Jason Whitlock were doing was politicizing this tragedy. They've become tragedy trolls, in essence. And Whitlock has doubled down. He's even now said that the NRA is the new KKK, turning an organization that defends gun rights for everyone, not any race, for everyone, into a racist terrorist organization. It's shameless and shameful at the same time. So, yeah, Costas has every right to say what he wanted to say, but everyone else has every right to step up and say, wait a minute, you don't have the facts. You need to get some facts before you try to tell the rest of us in this country how to live.
All right. A listener notes that Rush Limbaugh was essentially fired by ESPN. He was offering Indeed. Football commentary years ago and made a racist comment, got fired. Should Costas be fired, Brian?
Well, actually, Limbaugh's comment wasn't racist. What he said was that then Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Donovan McNabb was given a pass by the media. Essentially, he was overrated because he was a black quarterback. Now, you can debate whether he was right or not about that. The fact is, I always thought McNabb was a pretty good quarterback, even though I despised the Eagles. But the media, the comment was about the media, not so much about McNabb, who Limbaugh even said at the time he thought McNabb was a good quarterback and a good person.
He knew what he was doing, and Bob Costas,
yeah, he was criticizing the media,
and Bob Costas knew what he was doing. Limbaugh got fired. Yeah. Should Costas be fired?
I think Costas should be fired. I mean, the fact is Hank Williams Jr. was fired a couple of seasons ago for saying something anti-Barack Obama. If he can be fired for that, then Costas should be fired for this, but we know it won't happen. NBC has aligned itself with the left in this country and has gone all in on that. So this commentary is just par for the course for the same network that does things like editing the George Zimmerman tapes to make him sound racist when he wasn't and things like that. So I don't think there will be any repercussions at all for Bob Costas within NBC.
So you're saying if he worked for CBS or ABC or Fox, he might be out of a job?
I think there's more likelihood of that, but not a great likelihood because, you know, let's face it, media folks can come out and take a left-wing position anytime they want, and there are no repercussions for it. As soon as they step outside the media's bubble and say something that's either center or from the right, that's when they get into trouble.
I'll tell you what, Costas is the most youthful 60-year-old man I've seen in some time. So
he's doing something right, isn't he?
But you're saying he ought to keep his mouth shut. If he did that, I don't think he would have a job. But I'm sure, has made some remarks that will live for a long time, and probably the most quoted remarks he ever made were written by somebody else, Jason Whitlock.
Yeah.
But we shall see where this goes. But Brian Preston, we thank you for joining us. Your reaction is that Costa should be fired, but that he will not be fired.
Correct. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it. And we'll take a short pause on WRKF, and certainly we encourage you to keep the trains rolling, the programs going, by contributing to WRKF. And we shall take a short pause, and we'll have more coming, including a discussion about Governor Jindal's voucher program going down the tubes in district court, and the veteran Bill Davis, the front man for Dash Rip Rock. But first, this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Today in the New York Times, there is a story regarding the court decision last Friday. Judge deals a setback to Louisiana's voucher program. The story from Campbell Robertson reads, last January, Governor Bobby Jindal took the oath of office for his second term, declaring in his inauguration speech that anyone who stood in the way of his education reform efforts must stand down. On Friday, a judge in Baton Rouge said, in effect, not so fast. Judge Tim Kelly ruled that the way in which vouchers are used through state finances violates the state constitution, relying on money intended in plain and unambiguous terms solely for public schools. Governor Jindal calls the decision wrongheaded and a travesty for parents across Louisiana and vows to appeal. And with us to talk about it is Eric Lewis, director of the state chapter of the Black Alliance for Educational Options. Good morning to you, Eric.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
What's your assessment of the court decision Friday?
Well, I think it's a travesty, and I think it's unfortunate that we've set these kids back. 5,000 kids are in schools that their parents wanted them in. 10,000 kids apply for this program, so obviously there's a demand for it, and there's a cry by parents to have some better options for their kids. And so we're, as an organization, we're going to continue to stand with parents, and we're going to continue to fight to ensure that they have access to high quality education.
Well, the decision by Judge Kelly, who is a Republican, whose wife was the first commissioner of administration for Governor Jindal, it didn't really get to the merits of whether the voucher program is a good idea or a bad one, Eric. It just said that it's unconstitutional as it's currently written.
Well, and as I've, we've stated, that they're, and in our history in this country, there have been a number of things that have been unconstitutional. And so that doesn't mean that we should stand down and let injustices continue to prevail. And so clearly understand that, his ruling was that the funding mechanism for the program is what was unconstitutional. And so, but we also understand that, the Constitution is not an infallible document, and so that it can be changed. And so our hope is that, we're going to continue to see it through this legal process. And we're going to do what we can do from our standpoint to ensure that cooler heads prevail.
What's the next step?
Well, as I understand it, the attorneys are appealing this to the state Supreme Court. And so at some point, this will be heard by the state Supreme Court. Dates have not been set yet, but all projections are that it would be sometime in the spring, based on the Supreme Court's current docket. And so again, parents are, anxious to get some stability in the lives of their kids. And so hopefully this will be heard before the Supreme Court within the next 6 months.
How do you think Judge Kelly should have ruled?
Well, the judge's responsibility is to interpret the law and to interpret the Constitution. It was obviously our hope that he would have found that the legislation was constitutional. And so unfortunately that did not happen. And so we understand that this is a part of the process. I think when we were on your show previously, we indicated that, our opposition in this fight has been the teachers' unions. We were in serious contention throughout the legislative process. our side won during the legislative process. And so we anticipated this legal battle. So it's not necessarily a surprise to us or to, you know, to many of the parents that are involved in this process. We just do know that we had to continue the fight.
Well, it's a case in which the judge has ruled. Now it goes to the Supreme Court. Do you have hope that the Supreme Court will rule another way?
Definitely. And so hopefully we will get a majority ruling in favor of us. And so that right now, that's what our aim and goal is. You know, so as we move forward through this process, hopefully at the Supreme Court level, we'll get a favorable ruling. But again, everybody that's been watching this, even if Judge Kelly would have ruled in our favor, everybody anticipated that the unions would have appealed this to the next level as well. So nobody expected this to be a short-term battle. I think everybody expected this to be a long-term fight.
We're visiting with Eric Lewis, director of the state chapter of the Black Alliance for Educational Options, for a few moments. You are, I guess, of the mind, Eric, that these schools are a step up from the schools that these kids are leaving.
Well, it's not necessarily what I think. It's what I can tell you that I continue to hear from parents. I talked to a gentleman from New Orleans yesterday who was I just can't even put into words how upset he was. And so his kids have been in this program at a school in New Orleans for 4 years. And a gentleman said himself that he pulled them out of public schools and this program was a godsend for him because he had a teacher who did not have the time to spend with his child to bring his child up to speed. And so they're at a school in New Orleans where they're thriving and they're doing well, and he refuses to allow his kids to go back into the situation that they were in, even to the point if they can't have the program, that he would prefer to homeschool them. And so I think that's what we have to understand, that it's not about Governor Jindal. It's not about the teachers unions, and this may be sacrilegious, but it's not even about Bayo. It's about the 5,000 kids and their parents who, without this program, many have had no other option for educating their children.
You just gave the acronym for your group, Bayo. Who is Bayo? Who's in the group?
So Bayo is... stands for the Black Alliance for Educational Options. It's a national organization that advocates for low-income African-American families in the area of education. And so our focus is to fight for policies and legislation that provide parents with access to higher quality educational options, such as the scholarship program, charter schools, virtual schools, and even high-quality options within the public school system. You know, so we have a staff here in Louisiana, been in Louisiana since 2008. And so our staff works directly with parents to train them and empower them to do their own grassroots organizing.
Senator Mary Landrieu issued this statement regarding the decision from Judge Tim Kelly. She writes, it's no surprise that State District Judge Tim Kelly ruled the unnecessarily aggressive and overreaching statewide voucher program unconstitutional. A strategic use of state-funded vouchers could be appropriate, but this diversion of public education dollars was a step too far and diminishes resources for meaningful reform efforts already underway at the local level. Judge Kelly was correct in setting appropriate limits. Noel calling from near LSU. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to both of you.
I recognize this as former school board member Noel Hammett. Hi, Noel.
Good morning, Noel.
Good morning. I had a couple of comments and questions for your guest. One is that each of the persons we've heard about from New Orleans was actually in a voucher program prior to this that wasn't ruled unconstitutional, that no one questioned because it wasn't paid for through the Minimum Foundation program. And many of us, myself included, cautioned those who were pushing this agenda at breakneck through the legislature that they were going at it wrong, that they were, in fact, in violation of the Constitution, and they never slowed the train down. So my question is, why didn't they slow down so that they could have done it in a constitutional manner, number one? And number two, all these parents that we're hearing from who have been in the voucher program for many years down in New Orleans are all praising the program for getting out of the Recovery School District. And I thought the Recovery School District, with all of its charter schools and wonderful opportunities, I thought it was this great program that was the miracle of New Orleans.
Mr. Hammett, let me respond to the last question first. I think that's disingenuous, and people continue to say that. The reality is that the Recovery School District is the former New Orleans Public School District. I mean, the Orleans Parish Public School System. And so the reality is that many of these parents grew up and were educated in the Orleans Parish School System that has failed generations of kids. You know, putting a new label on the school, same old schools, doesn't miraculously change things overnight. Now, that being said, you know, you are a huge statistician. You do a lot of research. And so you'll find that the growth that's been seen in New Orleans since some of these reforms have been made are outpacing any school district in the state. That being said, I also want people to be mindful of the fact that, you know, so to your first question, the program was originally funded out of a line item in the governor's budget. And so, you know, the millions and billions of dollars that would be required to fund 5,000 kids is something that the state, you know, has to work through. We believe that money should follow the child. And so, unfortunately, the judge did not rule in our favor in this case. And so we'll continue to fight that fight because at the end of the day, these parents that have participated in the program are taxpaying citizens as well. And so I think they have a voice in this fight. And, you know, validly, they believe that they should have a say in where their tax money goes. And let's not discount the fact that it's not just Orleans Parish. Again, you know, we have over 600 kids in the Baton Rouge region that have participated in this program. And so, you know, we believe that these parents should have a voice in where their kids are being educated.
All right. Noel, do you have a response?
Oh, of course I do. The New Orleans public school system today, going back to his notion that they took over a failing school system, is one of the top-rated systems in the state, whereas the recovery school district in New Orleans is exactly in last place. Now, they claim it's not, but it's only because they're churning students through the lowest performing quarters in New Orleans, actually changed the names of these schools and changed the management of them from almost day to day so that they don't have to report those students. But the miracle isn't working, and I think your guest knows that. Bayo knows it. They're being funded well for all of their claims that they make on behalf of the administration. But the fact is the local school system, the taxpayers, are without a voice in this new system.
Eric?
I disagree with that completely. I mean, the reality is, and you know, let's not be distracted from what this issue is about. The reality is that the children that are in this program have never had a voice. Whether it's Baton Rouge, Orleans Parish, Cato Parish, if you have money in this state, you have access to a high-quality education. You can pick up and move. You can talk to people within the school system, and I'm sure Mr. Habit knows that very well, that you can talk to people within the school system to make sure that you get your child into the best school. We have parents in the Baton Rouge school system or in the Baton Rouge community who've never had access to this type of leverage to ensure that they have choice with their children's education. And so this is just one of many mechanisms that we want to give poor parents so that they can change the outcomes for their children's education.
Well, thank you, Eric Lewis. Good to see you as always, and we'll follow this. Supreme Court's next. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
And we're joined now by Bill Davis, the front man for Dash Rip Rock, a group that started 28 years ago, 1984, when Bill was getting his master's degree in journalism at Louisiana State University.
That's right. Where we shared a couple of classes, I believe.
And we worked together at the Reveille.
That's right.
And all these years later, you're still on the road.
I'm still doing the music thing. I love it so much, I can't stop.
About 150 nights a year?
Yeah, that's average. You know, there's been some times in my career where we did more than that. We topped 200 per year because it's you know, you hit when the iron's hot, and we just we get so much enjoyment out of playing, so we'll sing at the drop of a hat. So.
And you look as young as Bob Costas.
Oh yeah, thank you.
How's the hearing? How do you keep your hearing?
Well,
after all
you
that?
Know, surprisingly enough, I can actually hear what you're saying to me right now.
I know.
So
without
it's
any
shocking, but yeah, I have a little bit of hearing loss, but I don't think you know. Who knows? I'm not ready for the ear horn just yet. So.
But recently, Mr. Bill Davis and Dash Rip Rock They were inducted in the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame.
That's
congratulations.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much. And we're very honored to be in there with the giants of Louisiana music like Jerry Lee Lewis and Fats Domino and Dr. John. Mm-hmm.
Governor applauded you.
What's that?
Even the governor applauded you.
That's right. That's right. We have a plaque signed by the governor and it's official and I believe we worked hard enough to be in that number, so we're very excited.
Maybe he and Sapria, the first lady, will come to a concert with Dash Rip Rock.
You know, I'm not looking for them to show up anytime soon. I mean, we're a loud rock and roll band, so I don't know if that's his style.
Well, we're going to talk more with Bill Davis after we pause briefly on WRKF. And as we go to our break, Kevin, let's listen to latest entry from Bill Davis. So there's 17 albums?
This is a number 17. Yeah, this is called Black Liquor.
Mississippi girl, raised on the Pearl, working at the plant to bug a loose world. Fast as a thought, sleek as a fox. They laid her in the ground in a white pine box.
You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and in studio with us is Bill Davis, the front man for Dash Rip Rock, 28 years on the road with his band. Almost 5,000 concerts during that time.
You did the math.
I did the math. And speaking of math, today is the 75th birthday of Jethro Bodine, Max Baer Jr., who comes on this show on occasion. It's been a while, but Max Baer has a connection to Dash Rip Rock.
Well, yeah, in some weird way. But, you know, okay, he was on the show with Donna Douglas, who played Ellie Mae on the Beverly Hillbillies. And so when I was kicking around LSU looking for a name for my band, we'd see Donna Douglas out in her front yard working in her azalea patch, and I thought, why don't we just name ourselves after her boyfriend? So her boyfriend on the show was Dash Rip Rock, so that's it.
So that's how the name began 28 years ago in 1984, the year that Ronald Reagan beat Walter Mondale 49 states to 1. And here we are.
My, how things have changed.
All these years later, President Obama beats Mitt Romney by about 5 million votes, and Dash Rip Rock's still going probably for a few more administrations. How long do you think you can keep this up?
You know, I don't think that music has an age limit on it. You know, I'm watching people like Willie Nelson and Neil Young and some great bands like the Rolling Stones still out touring. And you know, as much as I love doing it and it hasn't lost any of its, you know, excitement or you know, energy. And so I don't know. I'm going to do it until I guess they're throwing dirt on top of me, probably.
And you have had people in your band who've gone on to great things.
Become great performers on their own. You know, Fred LeBlanc, of course, was one of our first drummers, and he has the band Cowboy Mouth. And it is. We're a launch pad for everybody else's music career in Dash Rip Rock.
And Dash Rip Rock's not bad. Member of the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame is Bill Davis and Dash Rip Rock. Who's with you now?
I have Patrick Johnson's a bass player from right here in Baton Rouge, and then our drummer is Johnny Value from Chicago.
So. Johnny Value.
Yeah, how you like that? That's his real name.
I like that name, yeah.
He's worth every penny of it.
Good value. Now, you travel a lot of places, don't you?
We do, yeah. We go to Europe. You know, we went to Europe this year and did a few festivals over there, and then we cover the South a lot. And and now that we have the new record, we're certainly going to get out and tour as much as possible.
The new record is Black Liquor, the 17th.
It is. It's about number 17. So we've, our first albums were vinyl, and now we're just doing like these download cards, which is just amazing to the different digital stuff that we're going through in these last few years. But things have opened up for us. I mean, we've got a whole new market, a whole new audience, and thanks to the internet, we've just been able to probably sell more records than we've ever sold, you know, which is just exciting.
What are some of the places you've enjoyed playing the most? Cities?
We do really well in the big towns like New York and Atlanta, but I love going overseas. We play Oslo and Stockholm people over there have a different appreciation of Louisiana music and Louisiana rock and roll, and they really look at you as you're some sort of, you know, road hardened blues man when you walk in, you know. And so they give you this love and appreciation that you don't get in the States. So it's because I think people here are just overfed with music, and they kind of get jaded to the, you know, to what we have, especially in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. You know, right. As far as the classic rock and rollers that are here, you know.
So, well, when you're sitting in class at the J School at LSU 28 years ago, getting your master's degree, did you think it would turn out like this?
You know, I hoped it would turn out like this. You know, I mean, I did my journalism jobs, and you know, I had a few pretty interesting, you know, things going on, and then I just thought, man, I got to do the music. You know, it's almost like it's a necessity, and I'm so lucky to have been able to make a living out of it, which mm-hmm. is just awesome.
You're often referred to as a rockabilly band. Is that an apt description?
You know, that's part of our sound. I mean, you know, what we've kind of segued into, you know, as we've gotten older, we've become more of a roots rock, maybe Americana thing, but we still have that rockabilly energy. I mean, when you look at people like Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard and the way they used to perform mm-hmm. with the wildness, I mean, we haven't lost any of that energy. We still give mm-hmm. it everything. And Elvis Presley.
Elvis
which
Presley.
Brings us back to Ellie May.
Yeah, she didn't want to talk about Elvis. She was on the show.
Right.
And the first caller asked her about Elvis, as things often turn out.
Yeah.
Now, Bill Davis, who's a mild-mannered, nice guy. you know, when sitting in class, before I knew you were into music, I you wouldn't have been the guy I would have pointed out as the rock star.
Well, I know. That's strange. And, you know, the thing is like, we were sitting there, I guess we were trying to set our sights on some sort of crazy career. But you know, as when I was working at the Reveille, when I was working at KLSU, I was secretly plotting my future rock stardom.
Well, it turned out well. And I've been in other cities, and I'm always amused and pleased when I see Dash Rip Rock in windows in places like Little Rock.
Oh, absolutely.
Juanita's, right?
Yeah, Juanita's. What a great place. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we definitely, I think it's essential to travel in the music business. You can't just, mm-hmm. if you sit around, you're like a Holiday Inn band or something. So we always make it a point to cover as much ground as possible.
And it would be fair to say that this is an irreverent band. There are topics that you go and embrace that others would not.
We are. I mean, we don't shy away from any sort of controversy or I don't, anything. I mean, I love having an open, you know, way of speaking about things and singing about things. So, I mean, on the new record, it's mostly based on Louisiana. You know, it's like a lot of our records through the past have been about partying and the wildness of just the Louisiana life. But what I love about this new record is we've sort of taken more a little more of a serious turn. And I love it because I love the state so much, and I love talking about it.
Well,
so.
Black Liquor is the new one, but Bill Davis literally has a catalog of classics in his past, and Kevin Gallagher has chosen at least one for us to listen to.
Oh, here we go.
Well, what are we going to hear, Kevin?
Well, you can smoke it, you can chew it, you can really try to do it, smoking pot. Singing in a song, you smoking in a bomb, smoking pot,
pot, pot, pot.
Well, it's a latest sensation that's sweeping the nation, smoking pot,
pot, pot, pot.
Let's go smoke some pot.
Now, did Governor Jindal know he was signing that proclamation naming you to the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame?
You know, I think he had no idea whatsoever, you know, and this song is always, you know, it's always misunderstood because people think that we're saying, yeah, go smoke pot, you know, but actually we're making fun of people that smoke pot. You know, when we wrote this, they had all these hippie bands out there like the Grateful Dead and Widespread Panic and et cetera, and we thought, man, you know, these guys are ruining the music business. You know, let's do something to take them down a notch. And so we just, this was a, this is a humorous stab at that culture. So yeah, it's anti-pot, really, Jim.
It is.
And I think Governor Jindal would approve.
Maybe so. And there's some selections that have to be edited rather delicately to be featured on this show. Now, Kevin's gone into his trick bag, and believe me, when I didn't really appreciate how many songs you've done that are part of the culture now.
Yeah.
Kevin, do we have another one that we can listen to?
Oh, this is a good one, yeah.
I hope it's edited.
love it. I love being beeped.
Yeah, I don't know if we can even say the title of that one, but another classic from Bill Davis and Dash Riprock.
Yeah.
You'll be performing here on the 20th?
We'll be at the 20th at Mud and Water in Baton Rouge, and then on the 15th we'll be at Siberia in New Orleans. And those are both record release parties, so we'll have our CDs there, and it's going to be...
Where is Siberia?
Siberia is in... It's in a way distant corner of a neighborhood. No, it's in the Marigny, so it's on St. Claude.
That's perfect for Dash Riprock.
Yeah, it is. Really is.
Well, congratulations on becoming a member of the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame. Bill Davis.
Thank you so much.
And Dash Riprock, 28 years on the road and nearly 5,000 performances, and he's still going strong. Let's talk soon.
All right.
Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Glad you're doing well and looking younger than Bob Costas.
There you go. Y'all come out and see us.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening, everybody. Please keep contributing to WRKF.